Two Bars World Fuck Up with Joe Forrester and Hannah East.
Hello and welcome to FUBAR's World Fuck Up, the show that's clinging on to the World Cup longer than Gianni Infantino before he finally decided to actually hand it over to Leo Messi. So that's it for another World Cup. And we're left with that peculiar feeling of emptiness, uncertainty and mild apprehension that usually accompanies the morning after the work Christmas do. When you thought it would be a good idea to serenade the entire party with an a cappella version of All I Want for Christmas before promptly throwing up his Sharon from Account's handbag. Anyway, the good news is that Leo Messi is finally a world champion, bowing out on the world of international football at its zenith with a swish of his traditional Qatari robe. Meanwhile, the Croatian national team seem to be the only ones who actually care about finishing third in the tournament. And Kylian Mbappe looks ever so glum, despite scoring a hat-trick in the World Cup final and now being only 5 goals away from being the outright top goal scorer in World Cup history. That is absolutely mental. Right, coming up on today's show, Todd from the Wombats is with us to look back on a bonkers tournament and tell us just who the Barn Elf is. Sports journalist Daniel Edwards joins us from a rocking Buenos Aires. We've also got Jeff Jeff Royce from The Athletic, talking all things World Cup 2026, USA, Canada and Mexico. And we're going to be talking to sports psychologist Dan Abrahams. No Hannah today, so it's bound to be a good show because we've got Nicole Holliday instead. You're out, Nicole.
Super sub. Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. You enjoyed the World Cup?
You know what? I really have. I had such mixed feelings, as, you know, most people did heading into it. And with it being in winter, like that first England game, sitting in a pub with about 5 jumpers on and drinking mulled wine with a 1 p.m. kickoff on a Monday just felt a bit wrong. It's been such a good tournament, hasn't it? And that final, what an incredible game of football. Those are the games where you kind of go, how do people not like football or sport? Like, how does someone watch this and not enjoy it? It was just absolutely brilliant, wasn't it?
It was, I think, that last 90 seconds of extra time when France missed a header by a centimetre down one end. It went down. Martinez made that save as well. Yeah. Went down the other end as well. Then Lautaro had a clear header in the box. That should have been the moment that Argentina won the World Cup. And he headed it wide from 5 yards. And it's literally, I was standing head in hands. I was like, this is genuinely blowing my mind, this match.
It was incredible. End-to-end stuff, exactly what you want to see from a final. And yeah, I think Qatar will be very happy with how it has panned out. And you've got to say, possibly or probably the best World Cup final ever.
Without a doubt. Right, let's bring in Todd from the Wombats. I'm so excited to say that. Right, let's just see if we can hear and see. Oh, I can hear Todd.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, mate. How's it going?
Good.
I've only just calmed down after what I think was the best World Cup final ever. What did you make of it?
I mean, it was just an absolutely unbelievable game.
Yeah.
I don't know. The thing is that it felt like it had every aspect of the game, I thought. It was just that sort of it kind of started I thought just Argentina was so much better than France. Yeah. And I thought they were talking about them having a virus or whatever in the team. And I was oh yeah, there's definitely something going on. They have nothing to give. They have given up and then it's 10 minutes left and that happens. And it's just so dramatic, isn't it?
It was absolutely bonkers. Yeah.
The drama comeback that you can wish for.
Yeah, that comeback from France, to be fair, was pretty insane. How nice was it to see Messi lift the World Cup?
Oh, you just saying that now gives me goosebumps. seriously, it was so well deserved. I was I was so hoping for that. And I guess because every time France came back into the game and it kind of they're going to crush him getting that final sort of trophy that he didn't have. So, I think everyone was apart from maybe the French fans, of course, but I think everyone just wanted him on and thought it was well deserved. So
it was that moment we were just talking about, myself and Nicole, when right at the end, when Lautaro missed the header. And I just thought, it's a goal. That's a goal. And he somehow missed. And I thought Messi must
have missed it so badly as well. I just couldn't believe it. It was it's not he freaked out or something. And just, yeah. And then France had that chance as well. And Martinez kind of just got in there with his foot, was it, or whatever. That could have been a goal as well. You know,
it
was
incredible.
A minute left.
It was all a bit awkward, wasn't it? The ceremony at the end when, President Macron kind of shaking hands with Kylian Mbappe and not letting go, kind of like a bit like the drunk head of accounts at a Christmas party. He's telling you what a good kid he thinks you are, and you're like, oh, just...
He was so disappointed. Then again, like, just put on the medal, you know, get on with it. You know, I mean, it's easy to say when you watch it, and he's obviously been through like 120 minutes or whatever of pouring out all the last bits of energy he's got in his body. You know, like, I can understand that. It's I mean, it's a different feeling for him probably than, but then again, you know, he's won it already. It's like, come on. And he's got like probably 3 more World Cups in him, so he can win it again. That's why that was my take on it. Anyway, you just like, you know, get on with it. You know, like, at least talk to your president, and you know, like, you can give us a smile.
Well, Todd, I had to ask you while we had you on. So I worked on a show a few years ago where we looked at, it was a football show, and we looked at different traditions around the world, how people celebrate Christmas, right? So I thought, okay, Todd's coming on, I'm going to start looking up Norwegian Christmas, and I found, I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, Fosnissen. The barn elf? The barn elf? Is this a tradition you know about? So,
is this like Swedish, maybe?
So this apparently is a Norwegian Christmas, like an ancient, like kind of myth story from Norwegian Christmas about an elf that lives in the barn. And
Fjørsnisse. Sorry, this is the.
He had no idea what you were saying, Joe. That's the problem. Yeah.
Trying to tell me my Norwegian is.
Sorry, it's like, you need to work on that a bit.
So what's his deal, right? Because he's an evil elf that lives in the barn.
And you didn't need to put out, like, you know, people go into the like barn. So this is like usually for kids, you do or whatever. So you put out like a bowl of porridge or whatever. And the next day will be gone. You know, that's the sort of like myth. And, you know, we do that sort of thing with the kids. Now it's kind of more of a, like a naughty Santa, you know, his little like naughty Santa thing that we put out. Like, he's done like some prank or whatever, like the Christmas tree is full of toilet roll or something like that. We've been doing that sort of for my daughter, this, the build up to Christmas. So, every day he's doing something. And then the last thing he did was actually doing something nice to us. It was like, oh yeah, you got tickets for this like Christmas show or whatever. So we went to this like Christmas show. So
he's been a Ticketmaster.
Exactly.
It is quite weird talking about Christmas and the World Cup in the same show.
I can't get
around. The timing of it is also strange. George, what have you made of the tournament as a whole?
I mean, I've been enjoying it. A lot, really. There was a lot of obviously talks in the beginning, and it shouldn't have been there. And the timing, of course, is awkward for the players that they have to like get like you know, out of, you know, in the middle of the season, basically just having a break and then reset their minds and like being on with the national teams. And some players like the Norwegian team obviously didn't even qualify. So a lot of the Norwegian players, they just go like, you know, I got a bit of holiday and on, you know, had to do their own sort of workouts and stay with the team or whatever. But I think it's been really good, you know.
Yeah.
We were touring Australia around the time of the majority of the tournament, and I was just so jet-lagged. So I was like, and all the matches were in the middle of the night, so that was perfect. So when I woke up and couldn't sleep, I was like, put the footy on. It was brilliant.
Are there any particular moments or players that stand out for you from this tournament?
Well, it's impossible to talk about this World Cup without talking about Messi.
Yeah.
And I just like the way the ball is kind of like glued to his feet. Yeah. The way he moves with it. I just don't, and nobody does that. Like, nobody does that. It's like he somehow managed to get through players, and he's always like a step ahead of everyone, you know. It's unbelievable. I like to think that Norway's got like a player that could be a bit like him, Martin Ødegaard.
Giant Messi.
Odegaard. So as an Arsenal fan, Odegaard, that brings like joy to my ears.
Because he's like, he also has that element of like making the right decisions, doing it kind of like thinking ahead a little bit quicker than everybody else, and he has the ball kind of stuck to his feet a little bit. Maybe it would, with time, he can maybe achieve, like, do some of the same things, I think. But yeah, of course, Haaland as well is a player that just, like, is doing ridiculous things in the Premier League at the moment. and it hurts my soul being a Man United fan seeing that.
I feel like also, by the way, Griezmann has been great up until, I suppose,
last night,
the final. Yeah.
Yeah. But what happened? He was so like, he had nothing in this. Like he was so, so good in the semifinals.
Yeah.
He was like, he was, did he get the player of the match? I think he did.
In the semis. Yeah.
In the semis.
Yeah. He was controlling that.
Yeah. And then he was just,
yeah, it's strange. He didn't show up, did he?
No. I feel like also, of course, we have to mention England and the disappointment. Yeah. Well, that was a weird one because I think a lot of England fans were pretty happy with how we played in that game against France. And, you know, we were kind of the better side, really.
Yeah.
Do we think that Southgate is right to stay on as manager then? I think a lot of us knew that that was probably going to happen.
Yeah. I think so. I think what he's done to the team, and I feel like there's some sort of community that I've seen. England has always like been this kind of like team that joins the Euros or the World Cup, having all these amazing individuals, but they never like come across as a team. You know, they always like and then I don't know. I just feel like there's some sort of togetherness. They play well together. I feel as well. Like I mean, sometimes I feel like I wish they were a little bit more like eager to kind of like go forward. Because sometimes I feel, especially from the back, you know, they could go a little bit like quicker to the front sometimes. But you know, I think they've been really good. I think they were much better than France as well. So I think they only had a couple of chances. France really, like you know, and then they score on those chances. England just didn't take the chances. And that was like, you need to do that.
it felt desperately unjust, that game. I mean, it's another reason why I was delighted to see Argentina win it last night.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
We're told, obviously, the EP, This Is What It Feels Like to Feel Like This, came out a few months ago. So go and get that. Go and listen to it, guys. Honestly, it's amazing. Like all the stuff the Wombats do is. But 2023.
Thank you.
Have we got gigs lined up? We're thinking festivals, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we got a few bits and pieces, but it's mainly like a year of like writing and you know, focusing on being in the studio again, making some new songs. That will, you know, be album 6. It's album 6. Yeah. So that is the plan for 2023, really. But we're going to India for the first time. So we're going to play in India back end of January. And then we do a bunch of festivals. I'm not entirely sure what kind of festivals are announced yet. So I might have to not talk too much about that, maybe. But we are playing a bunch of festivals this summer, both in Europe and in the UK.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I'm really hoping to see you guys next year. I'm sure a lot of people are as well. Thanks very much for coming on, man. We'll have to get you on again to talk United when the Premier League restarts.
Yes, that'd be brilliant.
Thank you very much, Todd. Really appreciate your time, mate. Thanks, man.
Nice one. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Todd. Right, now, let's head over to a rocking Buenos Aires. I wonder if anybody in Argentina has been to sleep. I seriously doubt it. You just wouldn't, would you? Daniel Edwards, sports journalist based in Buenos Aires, is with us now to talk us through what must have been an absolutely bonkers night.
Hello, good morning.
Boom. Hey.
Hello, mate. First question is, how much sleep have you had?
Surprisingly decent amount of sleep, but that was because I got to the point last night where I just couldn't go on any longer. Like, so it's such an intense day, intense celebrations, and by the time got to about midnight, that was enough for me. I'm not a young man anymore, and that was fine. Straight into bed. So surprisingly fresh this morning, relative.
What was the reaction in Argentina to that game? Because I was watching it, head in hands, jumping up and down off the sofa. It was absolute, it was bonkers. It's one of, if not the maddest game of football I've ever seen, particularly given the context of the World Cup final, Messi's final game for Argentina as well. How on earth did people in Argentina handle it?
No, just every single twist and turn, people on the edge of your seats. So, you know, I live in an apartment in Buenos Aires, and quite annoyingly, my neighbour's TV feed was about half a second ahead of mine.
Oh, no.
We could hear everything just before, you know, seeing it on TV and just hearing So it was good. It kind of took a bit of the tension out because in the penalties, you could hear, God, come on, for each bit that went in Argentina's way. But no, all through the match, just gripping stuff, yeah. And people really just hoping Argentina could get over the line, you know, after being ahead so much in that final. And then once the penalties were done, like, floods of people just going into the streets, the car horns going. I don't know how many people were in the streets of Buenos Aires all through yesterday, but probably 3-4 million, definitely, considering everyone who was in their neighbourhoods and went down to the centre. And no, incredible stuff, like once in a lifetime stuff.
I would have been fuming if my neighbour was giving me spoilers through the wall, through their TV. I would be livid. It was such an eventful game. Were there any moments in particular that you thought it would be slipping away and that France were going to win it?
I think there were two key moments really for Argentina. Those last 10 minutes after Mbappé scored a fantastic goal to tie at 2-2. Where it looked like France had the fresh legs, they'd use all their subs, they were really going for it. Argentina just had to dig down and hold on. And then the final minute of extra time after they managed to equalise it again, the save from Dibu Martinez. That save, which is going to make his career, it's going to be replayed over and over and over and over again in Argentina on the same level as, you know, as the actual goals in the World Cup, because that really did win Argentina the World Cup. What a save. What a save. And you felt like if that didn't go in and Argentina could go to penalties, they had the edge. They could go all the way to win it. And that's what it proved to be. Fantastic.
But, you know, but then it went straight down the other end and Lautaro missed a sitter, clear header, and just made such a poor... And I was like, oh my... Like, how? Like, that was it. That's the World Cup, like, got that moment. Such tension, like you say. What was the reaction of people in Argentina to Messi wearing the bisht? This is the traditional Qatari robe that he had put on him at the end. And I kind of get the argument for, okay, like, obviously, like, the World Cup is a huge cultural event and they're the hosts, but the hosts don't traditionally do that. That's a moment for the players, and the greatest player of all time had his Argentina shirt and the badge covered up. And it felt like a real PR move because it was the Emir of Qatar who put it on him. And I saw it's not your moment, FIFA, the organizers, anyone like that. So I don't know. It felt a bit off to me. I wondered what you made of it.
Yeah. You know, obviously did a double take when the robe came out. But at the same time, I think the move was such here that Messi could have stripped off on the podium and received the World Cup absolutely stark naked, and no one would have blinked an eye. The main thing was that he had that cup in his hands. brilliant to see for Messi, like the little kiss he gives the World Cup before. You can see how much it meant for him, and it felt like that the whole tournament. You know, you wanted to win it for Argentina. The people wanted this cup, but they wanted it more than anything for Messi. Like, that was the photo everyone wanted to see. Messi holding the World Cup finally, and I don't think a robe or any other piece of costume is going to change that.
That I've got to admit, that moment where he got Player of the Tournament award and walked past and kissed the World Cup, that's one of my favourite images ever in football. When he did that and the smile on his face when he looked up, I was like, oh man, that's football right there. That's what it's all about.
Beautiful moment.
The only moment that could potentially beat that was then Emi Martinez doing the pose with the golden glove.
Oh my God. He's an absolute lunatic.
Yeah, that was... I mean, it made me laugh, but I was also like, what are you doing?
Yeah, kicking the ball away during the shootout as well. Like, honestly, the arch villain. And I thought, I love it. I love to see that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What was your favourite moment of the tournament then, Daniel?
So first of all, Emi Martinez is clearly unhinged. He talks a lot about how he goes to his therapist and how that's managed to get him centred and a less anxious person. And there's kind of a running joke in Argentina that the therapist doesn't actually exist. It's all in his head and he's kind of having these long conversations, which just makes him a little bit more crazy. But it seems to work for him. It's fine. The final, you know, seeing Messi lift the World Cup. That's just a moment you're not going to forget. Martinez's two penalty saves against Netherlands as well after a very similar match. Now Argentina being on the verge of victory and letting it get back at 2-2. And then I think just all through the tournament, you know, the way they came back against Mexico, a game that, let's not forget, if they lost, they were heading home after the second game. It was absolutely do or die. And the team rallied and managed to get through that game after another brilliant goal from Messi. Pick a moment from Messi, almost the assists against the Netherlands, the assists against Croatia, the goals he scored. Yeah. What a tournament. To be in Argentina and just take it all in. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
Listen, Daniel, thank you so much for joining us, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure. Massive congratulations to everybody in Argentina. It was, if it couldn't be England, that was the outcome that I think we'd have wanted. Exactly. Nice one, mate. Thank you very, very much, Daniel.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Right. Okay. Now it is time, given that it's the end of the series, for a World Cup quiz hosted by Nicole Holliday. So we have partnered with the guys at thefootballgame.co. It's a brand new football game that's coming out next year. We're hoping to do a bit more work with them. Basically, I love making up stupid football quizzes for my mates, and we do them in the pub, right? So there's a game called Starting 11, which we do, which I heard somewhere else and have kind of reformatted to work with the lads in the pub. And like whenever we go to like an event at a wedding or whatever, like my mates come over and be like, got a good Starting 11 for us today. And I'll sit down, I'll be like, yes, Villa West Ham 2008, like whatever. Like, oh, it's so good. Literally, it's just like at that point, everybody's partners like, just walk away and leave us all sitting there. So when I found out that these guys were, and it's actually one of my mates who I play Starting 11 with, sent me the link to these guys' website. They're making basically a quiz that rewards obscure football knowledge, and they've been kind enough to send us some World Cup themed prototypes. Anyway, let's bring in Richie Sheehy, musician and comedian, and also the man who has been dubbed Cork's biggest Liverpool fan. But that will not help him today because it's a battle of wits against yours truly. Richie, how you doing, mate?
I'm grand, man. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Very well. Are you ready mentally after the drama of last night's final for an even bigger contest facing me in a World Cup quiz?
Just about. Yeah. No, I was big on going for Argentina, like, so I was quite happy, but it was very nerve-wracking. All right, like,
everybody in the world outside of France is delighted this morning.
Yeah.
I've got to say that. Right, so the way the game works is basically we're going to have 30 seconds each. We bid against each other to say how many of each things we think we can name. So Nicole is going to read out a question. So for example, like I said, how many Brazilian forwards can you name? I think I can name 2, 4, 6. And then when one of us calls the other one out, they have to do it. And whoever wins from that takes the point. There's three questions.
30 seconds to name them, or as many as you can do.
Okay. So Nicole, I'm going to hand over to you.
Oh, I've never been a quiz master, really. I quite like the power of it.
Yeah, the power. I can see it's going to your head.
It's quite nice. Richie, do you think you're quite good at quizzes?
I'm not sure if I'm good at quizzes the morning after the World Cup final, to be honest.
That's the spirit.
Yeah. I ate half a wheel of brie, so I feel you, bro.
Okay, guys, serious now.
Yes, sorry.
The first question is... how many nations can you name that have won the World Cup? Richie, how many do you think you can name in 30 seconds?
I give it 8 anyway.
8. Okay. Ooh. I feel like that's pretty...
He's gone in with quite a big move there because I don't know whether to call him or not. He's really alpha mailed me there, like an old silverback coming in.
Like, I mean, I feel like
that's worrying me now, but I'm like, no, I think I'm engaged to be pretty grand, to be honest. Like,
I feel like that's naming all of them pretty much. I'm just going through my list. Joe, you have a little thing.
Wouldn't it be hard to name all of them though?
I can name 10, Nicole. Are you still counting, Nicole?
Yeah, I don't think there are 10, Joe.
There aren't 10.
I have 9 on this list.
Oh, well, I suppose Richie better call me then.
I'll call you on that, so yeah.
Okay, cool. Nicole, have you got the timer ready?
Let's hope my sources are correct. Okay, so you've got a 30-second timer. Joe, you think you can basically name every nation that has ever won the World Cup?
Yes.
Okay, I'll count you in. I'll do 3, 2, 1, yeah?
Yeah, sure.
God, I'm nervous for you. Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
Uruguay.
Yeah.
Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
West Germany.
Oh.
England.
Yeah.
Argentina.
Yeah.
France.
Oof. Yeah.
You know, some others that I'm sure are very good at football.
Got 10 seconds.
Some Argentina. Oh my God, who else has won the World Cup? Literally, who else has won the World Cup? Italy.
Yeah. Oh, 2 seconds. That's it.
It's, seven.
That's it. I think.
You didn't mention Spain, one... did you?
Did you say Uruguay?
I said Uruguay.
Yeah.
I got seven. Yeah.
I mean, you almost Germany, France, Germany, Argentina, Spain, Italy, Brazil,
mm-hmm.
England,
mm-hmm.
Uruguay. Yeah. I think you just didn't get one.
I was missing one. That's going to haunt me forever. I'm sure people are going to tweet us and let us know. right, so that's 1-0 to Richie. Nicole, what's the next question?
The second one
this really favours me. Really favours me.
Players in England's 2006 World Cup squad. How many can you name? So there are 23. Go on then, Richie. How confident are you? How many can you name in 30 seconds?
Not hugely confident. But I'd say I could probably name about 12, though, but...
it's more than me, I think. It's a long... It's 16 years ago, and I mean, I know I'm very old, but my memory's not what it was.
You are old.
Do you know what? 12, you're saying, Richie?
Yeah.
I'm going to call you on that.
Okay.
I'm going to call you on 12. That 30 seconds goes quick.
Yeah. Okay. Also, God, this is a big list. My eye's going to have to work very quickly. Okay, 12 members of the England 2006 World Cup squad. You've got 30 seconds. I'll count you in 3, 2, 1. You ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, go!
Theo Walcott, Peter Crouch,
yeah.
Gary Neville, Steven Gerrard, Wayne Rooney, Sean Campbell, maybe?
Yeah, that's you're on six.
God, it does go fast, damn. Who's the keeper? Oh, it's killing me. I'm done already.
You've got 5 seconds.
No, I just blanked completely. Like,
I definitely know a lot more
English players from the 2006 squad, but after that initial burst, I was like, nah, it's done. I was like, Theo Walcott was brand new then.
You did so well, you started off so strong.
I empathize with Richie though, because there's a moment where you basically think you're running away with it, and then the lack of confidence hits you. And it's one of the many reasons I'm not a professional sportsman, and I just go, that's it for me. I'm all over. I've ruined it. Shrink into myself.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'd probably miss Liverpool players and everything. Like, I mean, it's pretty poor.
Yeah, but it's tough. It's a lot harder than I feel like anyone listening at home will be like, what? That's so easy. But when you've got the time pressure and you're on the spot, it's actually really difficult to do, isn't it?
So that makes it 1-1 going into the final question, Nicole.
That does make it 1-1. So the last question, which I'm not going to lie, is going to be a nightmare for me to try and follow what you say. So I'm hoping that you're both going to be really bad at it. The final question is nations that have hosted the World Cup. So how many do you think you guys can name in 30 seconds, Richie?
Oh, God. I mean, I can name 6, I'd say.
Okay.
You see the confidence has gone gradually. Yeah. Down. You know what I mean?
I was going to start off and be like, 3?
Yeah, you're starting too high, I think. I think so that's where you're going wrong.
I'm going for 9.
9? Okay.
I feel quite good about this one.
Okay, so Joe, you think that you can name 9. Richie, are you going to go any higher than that?
No, I think that 10 and 30 seconds is too much. And I'm thinking you can kind of go with the... You just put the year after it, and you nearly always have the. I mean, that's probably what you're. I'm going to have to call you on the 9.
Yeah,
you try to do the 9, because.
Come on, for Leo, come on.
Okay, you are going to potentially reel through them, and I'm going to have to look very quickly through the list. So, Joe, can you name 9 in 30 seconds? I'll count you in 3, 2, 1, go.
Qatar, Russia,
yeah,
Brazil,
mm-hmm,
I've forgotten the one before that, Germany,
yeah,
Italy,
yeah,
Uruguay,
yeah,
England, Argentina, yeah, Mexico.
Argentina, Mexico. I think you have smashed that. Let me just clarify with my sheet. Argentina, Mexico. Yes, you had 11 seconds to spare as well.
I know. I actually know how Leo Messi felt last night. Now,
but you smashed that.
Thank you very much. That is a really, it's a really proud moment for me and my family. So,
that's a well big done. Congratulations, Joe. I believe you are the winner.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see a trophy going to England eventually.
Someone had to win one for us.
Yeah, finally. Yeah, God, brought it home. Right, Richie, just before we let you go, what did you make of the tournament overall?
It was actually pretty great. To be honest, like I wasn't really too gone on it at the start of it. I was like, no, I'm not watching it, you know, what's going on with that stuff? And then it seeped in. The knockouts are unreal. They're amazing. Like,
yeah.
I think predicted the Netherlands-Argentina match, probably the match of the tournament, I'd say. Oh, well, the final. To be
Until the final.
It was great. It was a great tournament in the end. Like, I was kind of going for Uruguay initially. For Nunez and Suarez, you know.
The most evil team in world football.
Yeah. They're like the Atletico Madrid, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when they're like it was pretty much Uruguay, and then it was like second, I'd like Messi to win it. Like then when Uruguay were out pretty early, it was like right full on energy, so I was pretty delighted.
Richie, listen, mate, just quickly, are you gigging at the moment? What's coming up for you, Christmas and the new year?
Well, what's coming up for Christmas is not a lot.
Yeah, it's nearly Christmas.
It's a lot of chilling out, not doing much. I'm gigging all around, like stand-up comedy in Dublin and Cork and Ireland, just around the place. I entered a song to be Ireland's representative in the Eurovision, but who knows where that will go. The song's good at some point. I mean, if it doesn't get picked, like the broadcaster picks six to be on like the Irish Late Night Chat Show in February. If it doesn't get picked, then I'll just release the song anyway, you know.
The unofficial Eurovision anthem. It could be the unofficial Eurovision anthem, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Look, Ireland has won Eurovision since like 98 or something, so it'd be nice to bring it back. But sure, if not anyway, I'm quite happy with the song. I'm looking forward to releasing the song anyway after getting it done. So we'll see how that goes. That's kind of the main project on right now.
Amazing. Thank you very much, Richie. Do check out Richie on Twitter and Instagram. It's Richie Sheehy. All of his work, comedy gigs, the music as well. And just basically get on his timeline and say how much you want him to be Ireland's representative in the Eurovision.
Yeah,
surely got to swing things. Listen, thanks very much, mate. We'll have to get you back on to talk about Liverpool in the new year.
Yeah, unreal.
Nice one, man.
After a nice break.
Yeah, that's it. I needed a bit of time off from Spurs as well. I feel you. Thank you very much, Richie. It's a real pleasure having you on. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks so much, guys.
Bye, sir. Okay.
So it's time for the big conversation. It's the bit of the show where we have an in-depth and uncensored chat about the controversies facing this year's World Cup. But in fact, we're not talking this year's World Cup. Oh, no. We're talking the next World Cup. Yep, for the final episode, we thought we'd look ahead to the tournament in 2026, which is being held in the USA, Mexico, and Canada. So there have been 16 host cities that have been announced so far. FIFA could potentially change the group stage round to accommodate an extra 12 teams. There's talks of penalties in the group stages. Who on earth knows what's going to happen? It does sound like a fun tournament, though. So joining us is Jeff Reuter, staff writer for The Athletic, who covers North American soccer. Jeff, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, it's refreshing to not have to talk about that round of 16 defeat against Louis Van Gaal. So I'm happy to look forward 4 years, my friend.
And also, it's quite refreshing because, as I understand it, you're stuck in 7 inches of snow.
That's right. There's that as well. But, you know, first things first.
Well, initially, there were three individual bids for the tournament. We've ended up with three host nations. I should say I'm very excited about this tournament, and I'm kind of thinking in my head already, can I get away in 4 years' time and maybe I can do New York and see if I can get down to Mexico and like try to already working it out. But we've got three host nations, USA, Mexico, and Canada. Now, obviously, Mexico is a traditional soccer nation, USA more so in the last 20, 30 years. And of course, have the infrastructure to deal with major sporting events, kind of given the stadiums and the logistics, that kind of thing. I suppose one question I would have is Canada, which has two of the host stadiums. is Canada ready from an infrastructure point of view for a soccer World Cup?
Yeah, I think that Canada, I mean, their presence, it, you know, you're not giving it a slight by throwing it in as kind of that third factor. I think that initially this appeared like it was going to be logically a bid between the United States and Mexico, two federations that are continuing to try to find ways to work together with their domestic leagues between Liga MX and Major League Soccer. They're creating new competitions on that front. So I think a lot of us were prepared for that. Now, of course, Canada does have three clubs within Major League Soccer in Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal. And so their presence was kind of inevitable. The president right now of CONCACAF, the region, is Canadian as well. So there's a little bit of continuity in that front. But in terms of whether or not they'll be ready, I mean, they don't have the same, you know, big NFL stadiums that you would have for in the United States. You don't have the Estadio Azteca, you know, those sort of like legendary, grandiose, you know, 80,000 seats or larger, which is essentially the point of this tournament. The reason that you have this tournament in the United States, the reason that you have this tournament in North America as a whole, is for attendance. It's still the highest attended World Cup in history, the 1994 edition. Wow. That ended up launching Major League Soccer by proxy. And when you look at Canada, I mean, they're going to be using Toronto FC's field. And so that's a capacity of 30,000. That's going to be one of the smallest venues at this particular tournament. When you get to Vancouver, you'll have 54,000. And that is a field that has gotten some concerns from players using the surface in terms of the quality of it, the maintenance of it. It's one of those partially covered fields. So at times, certain areas of the pitch get burnt and other parts aren't. So there will be some logistical questions in terms of that. But in terms of the cities themselves, in terms of Toronto and Vancouver as municipalities, essentially, I mean, they do have major city transportation. They do have the hosting accommodations. They do have the transportation infrastructure and all of that, where they should at least be able to facilitate. But again, the question is going to be if those venues end up being utilized to such a great margin and in the biggest games as the US and Mexico's inevitably will be.
I think it's interesting as well, because kind of given the context of this World Cup, people are like, well, okay, hey, if a few stadiums need some upgrades and some updates, that's fine. It's not like building seven new stadiums that might never get used again, like has happened time around. Let's talk about the teams on the field. So everybody expected certain things, I think, from the teams will be the host nations in 3 years' time. I think USA obviously knocked out by the Netherlands. I think that's a good result getting out of the groups. Ultimately, Netherlands, Louis van Gaal, you and I talking about it off air. Great coach, legendary coach. I'm sure you've been talking about it a lot. Mexico were largely disappointing until the last group game. I think people were disappointed not to see the attacking style of football. And Canada, everybody loved. Finished bottom of their group somehow, while simultaneously being one of the best teams to watch in the group stage. Where will these three teams be preparation-wise in 4 years' time?
I think that the U.S. will expect to be head and shoulders above the other two contenders by 2026. They're the national team program, the pool that has the most players playing in the top five divisions, for top five leagues of Europe. And so they have good representation at top level competition. The biggest hang up, obviously, when a host nation doesn't have to go through qualification, they're relatively untested, especially if you're not from Europe, South America, or Africa, where you do have truly great continental competitions. The Gold Cup in North America is not going to be as strong of a test as those competitions, the Euros, Copa America, all these competitions. And so I think that for the United States, they will probably be looking to get into the Copa America, which they hosted back in 2016, in order to get that sort of freshening up. But they look at their player pool, they look at the youth of it, they look at the top end talent, they look at the players who didn't even really perform at this World Cup, namely Giovanni Reyna, as potentially being able to take that next step forward and do better than the round of 16. I think for them, quarterfinal or further is going to be mandatory for it to be a successful tournament. Mexico is in a bit of a changing of the guard. They have a lot of players. I think they had seven players who had combined for over 800 caps for the national team that were representing them at this tournament, who will very unlikely represent them in 2026. So there's going to need to be that sort of roster churn that was already underway when Javier Chicharito Hernandez and Carlos Vela were phased out of the pool. Now, of course, they didn't have goals, right? And it does seem ludicrous that you would leave your top goal scorer, who was a finalist for Major League Soccer's Player of the Year award. You know, look, he's not the same player. Chicharito is not going to be doing the exact same motion, but it was pretty clear that they missed him at this tournament. And obviously he will not be available for selection in 2026. I would be pretty surprised if he's still playing at a high level at that stage. So for them, I think that they're much more nervous. They don't have that sort of youth pipeline of players who are already embedded with great European clubs to be able to oversee their development at the highest level, quite like the United States and Canada. Canada is going to need to do some work in refining their shape. I think John Herdman got caught out as naive, especially after the F Croatia song and dance routine, which aged terribly when you look at the fates of the two sides. But, you know, beyond that, their issues were twofold. They were in defense and they were in midfield, and they don't have obvious prospects in those two areas, particularly if you look at center half. They do have fullbacks. They're very good with width. They're very good with pace and with attacking. But now they need to build that sort of core, and that's where they were caught unaware against teams like Morocco, Belgium, and Canada. So, or in Croatia, excuse me. Yeah. So themselves, they outplayed themselves in midfield and training grounds, sure. But I think that all the same, as a result of it, they will still look to improve off of this. They will still expect to be able to get out of a group, for example, regardless if there's three or four within the group. They'll see a hosting as kind of a mandatory excuse for making more progress than they did in this past issue.
So we're also going to be seeing something quite different from, I'm hesitant to use the word innovative when it comes to FIFA, because I'm always kind of wary about how any of their initiatives are going to work.
Yeah,
48 teams. So theoretically, you're kind of like, okay, well, that's more football. That's kind of cool. But then you're like, well, hang on. My maths isn't the best, but is that 16 groups of three, 12 groups of four, 24 groups of two? I mean, how, 48 of one? How's this going to work?
Yeah, there's a mess with that. And this is actually, it's great. This is a piece I just wrote that might be going up later today on The Athletic. How will that 48 team World Cup work? It's still very much nebulous. And I think that even today, Gianni Infantino, giving his end of tournament remarks, did not really give much away. In fact, he actually walked back what had been assumed as the 16 of three model, as is quickly known, and saying that because of the 14 group stage, oh, people like that. We forgot. Maybe we should reconsider that. And admitting that they kind of overlooked the reality of how popular the current format is. I mean, personally, to me, if you're going to inevitably grow this World Cup to 64, which I think we all know they're just going to continue to add teams, this is FIFA after all. Just do it now, because then you can have two concurrent tournaments, like two World Cups side by side. You do the top half of the, you know, A through, help me with this, the letters, the alphabet, H, I believe it is. Yeah, and then all the way.
And then the worst teams compete against each other afterwards.
You could do a round robin. You could do the consolation tournament if you want to as well. The Europa League of the World Cup.
I was going
to
say the Europa League. Yeah.
Whatever the case is, you could pull it off. And I think it actually makes much more sense as a format, because you have two issues. If you do 16 by three, the group stage is a mess. You have the disgrace at Guillaume factor, where you could have a dead rubber game in the third, where both teams know they need a draw to advance. And so it's the most dull disgrace of a sport and competition that you've ever seen. But the knockouts make perfect sense, because then if you have two teams coming out, you have 32 teams in a bracket. That's a very clean bracket. You just add one more round to the current format. If you do 12 of four, you're going to need to give buys to eight of the 12 group stage winners, most likely. I think that that's the cleanest way. So you do the top point getters and goal differential, but that's an absolute mess, because that's not, if you let in one goal in stoppage time, we love the drama of it, but that means you have to play an additional game. It's just, it's not necessarily the right clear sporting format, you know? So it's a mess, but so it's FIFA. Yeah.
So yeah, cause I kind of assume, I don't know why, because I'm so used to 32 team tournament. I kind of assumed that one team, oh no, hang on, how would this work? Two teams would go through from each, the 16 groups of three. Yeah. Then you've got your 32, and then it's another group stage. But no, it would be a round of 32, theoretically, then 16 quarterfinals, semifinals.
I think you'd have to, because at that point, every team has already played two games. And so you can't really say, you know, 16 teams are going to get two games. And then another 16 team, you know, that math doesn't add up, does it? It does. It does. 16 get two. This is ridiculous, isn't it? And I think this is the point about. Is we've been talking about this 48 team World Cup in nebulous, right? We've been talking about it as a concept. We've just accepted it as like, there will be 48 teams. We'll figure it out in 4 years' time. There is no logical sporting format for this unless you radically reinvent tournament sports, which is something that is, the Olympics have tournaments. They're around the world, there are competitions. These formats have been explored. These formats have been watertight. There's a reason that you see 16 teams, 32, 64 as the most common formatting. If you go into American sports, there's March Madness with college basketball. And in that format, it's 64 spots. And so people are used to this, right? Yeah. I think that you understand how you can format these competitions. And right now with 48 teams, there's no real logical way. To finish that initial thought, though, if you do it the way that we're talking about here, where you have two group stages, two games for 16 teams, five games for another, and then you potentially have up to four more games. So there could be one team playing nine games in a month if they were able to win throughout. It's ridiculous. It truly is.
Nothing says enjoy the World Cup like having to have a degree in higher mathematics. Just finally, Jeff, what predictions do you have? Could the USA perhaps win a World Cup on home soil? Will we see penalties in the group stages? I know it's a long way out, but what do you think is going to happen in this tournament?
Yeah, I think that we're not done with the innovation. I don't think it will stop at 48. I think that they will see the media infrastructure of the United States, the national, again, the attendance potential, the fact that outside of the host cities, you also do have Major League Soccer, where all of these teams are building soccer-specific stadiums. So they say, okay, how are we able to enable this? Are we going to have a case where every single team has a home stadium they're training in, and then they're having scrimmages against the local MLS club or the local USL club or whatever the case may be? There is a real possibility that we're going to have these ridiculous kind of one-off games that are trying to be fanfare. Maybe they'll bring Diana Ross out of retirement or something so that she can kick another penalty, right? Or just find a reenactor. And
teach Harry Kane how to take penalties.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. You were going to say it, not me. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's going to be, I could see them trying to come up with something like the NBA All-Star Slam Dunk Contest. Mm-hmm. MLS has something called the Skills Challenge, where you have 8 players from both MLS and Liga MX compete in these little, they look like the FIFA training drills when you're at the loading screens of the video game, and you just have to pass into the certain nets and you have to chip it over 3 defenders and into the goal or whatever. They did that with Major League Soccer and Liga MX over the last couple of years. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they try to do a World Cup format, which I think would be fantastic. Just if we're all going to have to watch everything anyway, they might as well have some fun while they're doing it, right? So, I think the penalties in the group stage thing, I think it'll be explored. I think it's a little too soon. I think that that's a very radical format change with just 3.5 years notice. But hey, it's FIFA. They've surprised us all before.
I was going to say the same thing. This is FIFA.
And if we know anything about FIFA, Joe, is that they will do it with full integrity, clear eyes, and the priority of the quality of the sport above any other consideration.
Absolutely. And if you see any of them wearing brand new Rolexes, that is just a coincidence.
It's a gift. It was a lovely gift. That's right.
Hey, listen, Jeff, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Do go and check out Jeff's work, by the way, all of his stuff at The Athletic, all of his brilliant work, and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Reuter. That's JeffRueter to check out all of Jeff's fantastic work. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Anytime. Absolutely.
Okay, so after my well-deserved victory over victory over Richie, too much cheese. It's time for the World Cup's funniest moments. A big international tournament always throws up some weird moments, and today it's about body art. Now, footballers are famous for awful tattoos. Mm-hmm. Essentially, when you've got too much money and no real knowledge of what the real world is like, you just do mental things with your money. And Richarlison is the latest footballer to do this. So he's got a tattoo of his own face on his back alongside Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, Fat Ronaldo, my favorite player of all time, and Neymar. Now, apparently he didn't ask them, because Neymar has sent him, they're good mates, has sent him 26 grand to get it removed. So that's quite a specific amount. He must have Googled how much to get a back tattoo. Yep. Okay. 26,000. Nicole, would you ever get a tattoo of any of your friends or colleagues' faces?
Are you asking me to get a tattoo of you on my body? Because I've done it.
Whereabouts?
I've done it. Can you imagine if I was like, look at my foot. Here's a picture of me and you hugging from 2015. Also, the tattoo, if anyone hasn't seen it, I don't love it. It's also very large. And I think Neymar looks a bit strange in it as well. That's probably why he's given him money. And where's he plucked 26 grand from?
Do you know what it looks like? It looks a bit like when, you know, you go to like a fairground and people have done that dodgy art on like the side of the waltzers. Mm. It's done in that kind of style, like someone who's obviously got an art GCSE, but that was about the limit of their ability.
Yeah.
I just think, has he got no one? Like, is his wife or like his family not going, oh, he goes, oh, I'm going to get this. Get really? And just get like a little Brazil flag or something on your ankle. Like, this is too much.
Can you imagine going into the workplace and being like, hey, Shirley, you all right? I got this tattoo of us on the weekend. Bit weird.
Also, this is a good show where we like to celebrate crime. And an Argentina fan stole a bus full of passengers and drove 4 kilometres so he could get home in time for the kickoff of their semi-final against Croatia. Now, Did he invite, do you think he invited them in after? Because it's like, well, what are you doing? I was on my way to Sainsbury's, now I'm outside your house.
Yeah, I respect that. I mean, you'd be livid if you're a fellow passenger and it's driven the completely wrong way. It'd be quite convenient if you live near him. But yeah. I mean, people are just insane, aren't they? I like the dedication.
Yeah.
I kind of like that story, but I'm also like, hun, you can't do that in like real life, in normal life. You can't just steal buses.
Myself and my friend Harry were once on the 33 going to Richmond.
Shout out the 33.
Big up the 33. I would say circa 20 years ago. It was about 7 p.m. on a Friday night. And Harry was like, oh, I really need a wee. And the driver overheard this. I'm not joking. This is real. And literally like leant out his little booth and was like, don't worry, mate. Turned all the lights off on the bus and drove us all the way from where we were in Teddington to Richmond, missing, I would say, 9 or 10 stops. And all the other passengers who needed to get on it so Harry could get to Richmond and have a wee.
Is that nice? A bit weird?
When you're like 17 or 16 or whatever, as we were, you think, oh, that's so cool, man. Well, now you think that's monumentally selfish. Right, it's time to tell me something I don't know. It's all about exploring some of the most important aspects of football that never get discussed, or rarely get discussed, I should say. This episode, we're going to be discussing the role of sports psychologists. What are they and what do they do? Let's bring in Dan Abrahams, sports psychologist, of course, works directly with players, coaches and parents, and author of 4 psychology books, including Soccer Tough and Soccer Tough 2. He's a man of mental steel. Dan, welcome to the show.
I'm not sure on that, but I don't know if I can practice what I preach, but I try.
So, Dan, what has being a sports psychologist actually entail?
Oh, that's a broad question. I'll try and be as succinct as I possibly can. Look, at its heart, it's helping competitors in the sporting world be as mentally skillful. I think mentally skillful is a better term than mentally tough. Mentally skillful as they can possibly be. Really, we work to help players high perform more consistently under pressure. We help them become better learners. And we help also on overall well-being and mental health and stuff like that. Then there's a whole bunch of other things like teaming and leadership and relationships and day-to-day behaviors, and you can get as intricate as you want on all that stuff, but performance does lie at the heart of all of this.
And how important is that mental aspect? You hear quite a lot of time kind of layman's terms kind of saying, oh yeah, he just didn't have it mentally or whatever, and you look at players like Ravel Morrison, for example, is the one that kind of springs to mind for me. Loads of talent but never quite made it, and you look at different reasons for that. Is that mental aspect just as important as the physical attributes?
It's all interlinked, and I think that's the big challenge when you're trying to untangle this stuff, when you're trying to unweave it, is that they're all linked up. They're all integrated together. It's very difficult to take one away from the other, because the capacity to get the most from yourself physically is influenced by your ability to pay attention under pressure, to compete at the right mental intensity, to execute actions fearlessly, if you like, and on the front foot. And it's the same with the technical side and the tactical side. So it really is all interlinked. So on the one hand, I appreciate it when people say, well, that player, that person didn't have it mentally. But what we're trying to do is trying to help coaches and players link them all together and work mentally as they're working technically, tactically and physically. But yeah, absolutely. There are many players, competitors who don't learn very effectively and who aren't very good at competing under pressure, irrespective of the skill in their feet or the skill in their hands.
But that's the thing. There is so much pressure on these players, especially at a national level. So how do you help them kind of concentrate and avoid being too influenced by that pressure?
Hey, well, there's so many things I could say here, but the most important thing is to, I'm going to be a real psychologist here and say a term, to be task focused and action oriented.
Nice.
Told you I was going to be a psychologist. So task focus is, unbeknown to a lot of people, actually people talk about the will to win and the want to perform really well, but actually what you're striving to do a lot of the time is actually take players away from gotta win, gotta win, gotta win, gotta perform, gotta perform, gotta perform, onto the specific controllable tasks that they want to accomplish during a game. So if you'd watched England play in the World Cup, and England have got a lot better at this deliberately over the last 6 or 7 years because Gareth Southgate has worked with some really good sports psychologists behind the scenes, is that those players will probably, rather than being focused on winning, they want to win, we know that, but they will have within their role, the responsibilities in their role, specific tasks that they've got to accomplish that are much more controllable than winning or scoring or keeping a clean sheet. The second thing there is action orientation. Often to self-regulate your emotions, retaining a sense of action, a next action focus, right? Next action actually manages the thoughts, the feelings and the emotions that come and go as you're competing. So a task focus, action oriented, that's a real snippet of the kinds of things that we're doing with competitors.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
A big part of modern football is, sadly, in an interconnected world, in a world of social media, the abuse that footballers face. I think as England fans, we all kind of look back on the horrible abuse suffered by Marcus Rashford, Bukayo Saka after the Euros final. And that's part and parcel of being a footballer these days, is just idiots saying awful things to you online, essentially. Is part of your role to help the players deal with that? And how might you do that?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, my role with specific clubs, teams, or with specific individuals can vary. But of course, the thoughts, feelings, emotions that you're experiencing off the pitch or off the field or court, of course, are going to influence what you're experiencing on. And so managing those emotions is important. And look, I'm not going to say anything here that is particularly new. If I was to say, don't read the stuff. I mean, really, as the case is, it's potentially using social media for them instrumentally, as in, okay, we're going to lay down some tweets that inform my followers of what's going on in my world and our world in the team. It's engaging in that manner, and it's potentially engaging where you can to positive messages. But by and large, it's understanding. I'm going to come back to that term controllables again. It's understanding that you can't control what other people think, and accepting that, and simply laying there your tweets, and that's it. Ignore the rest. You can't take the pain and the hurt away from players. It's just helping them understand that they are going to experience pain and hurt from the messages that are delivered, and you can't control what those messages contain, and helping them just become a little bit better at accepting the internal experiences that they're having from those messages, but still focusing on their game, their lives, and what they do have, and being grateful for what they do have.
So interesting. I feel like we could chat to you all day, but before we let you go, can you just tell us a bit more about Dan Abraham's Soccer Academy?
Sure. Well, thank you very much for that. And there's some books as well. There's Soccer Tough, which if you're interested in this world, I was very lucky last year, Gareth Bale decided he was going to, in an interview with a newspaper, say it was a book that changed his life, which was very nice of him. I don't think it changed his life. I think it possibly helped him. But so that's Soccer Tough and Soccer Tough 2, which funnily enough is the sequel to Soccer Tough. And I've got a couple of other books, but those would be the main ones. And then the Academy is, I'm passionate about all those involved in football, soccer, to work on their mental game. So I've got these animated videos. They're not children's animations, they're whiteboard animations, which really brings to life the mental side of the game and helps coaches, players and parents work together on the mental side. So it's great for kids, teenagers who are ambitious in the game. So if you pop onto danabrahams.com, that might be of interest. So thank you for that.
I think for anybody who's interested in sport and watches sport and maybe play sport themselves, get yourself over to danabrahams.com. You can find all about Dan's work there, his academy, his books. It's genuinely fascinating stuff. Thank you very much, Dan. Real pleasure chatting to you.
Thank you.
So, Nicole, that's it for today. It's the end of the World Cup. It's the end of the show. Are you sad?
Aww, I am quite sad. Oh, yeah.
Tell your face.
It's been fun. Not the show, but the World Cup's been fun. Show's been terrible.
I just pulled my headphones out as well. In excitement. Yeah, well, thank you very much for joining us, Nicole. It's been a real pleasure having you.
Thanks for having me.
And listen, thank you to everybody who listened as well. We know lots and lots of people have listened to the show. Lots of people have engaged with the videos and stuff. Like, it's been an incredibly controversial World Cup. And I, for one, am very grateful to be able to be part of a World Cup show that gave us a chance to talk about those controversies, address them, and hopefully actually, I think perversely, and something that FIFA weren't counting on that's happened across the board with lots of media, actually be able to highlight and draw attention to these causes. It's been a real honour. Thank you for all the guests as well. Thank you to Hannah, I have to say that too. Thank you to producer Maddie. Thank you to Nicole for stepping in today. You can listen back to everything at foodbarradio.com and on your podcasting app of choice. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and have a jolly nice new year.